Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
306 DGS, absolutely gorgeous day out there. Trisha Clock.
We're doing... Are You With The Country? It's brought to you by The Good Feet Store, comfort, energy, performance, and pain relief at The Good Feet Store. And in case anyone doesn't know what Trisha Clock is, I basically get to do whatever I want. Dave lets me have this couple minutes.
Sometimes she just dances.
Silently.
Yeah, once you made s'mores, you never know.
He said, I could do whatever.
And Are You With The Country is just, we see polls every day, like a gazillion of them. Do you side with a majority of Americans on how they answered these questions? Like... In your opinion, how common is U.S. government surveillance of ordinary citizens who aren't committing crimes? Do you think it's common or do you think it's not common?
I don't know.
I think it's common.
You could be not sure.
I might be in the not sure category on
I think it's common, but passive. Like, I don't think, you know, the old joke, like we all have our own FBI agent who's watching all of our phones and webcams. I don't think it's like that, but I do think that whatever we do is just like stored off in a server
in case someone needs to look at it.
So that if you do go Jeffrey Dahmer,
they came out and said that the average person is on camera 18 times a day, 34 times a day, something like that. That you just have no idea. You're walking down the street, you're in a store, what have you. And I agree with Andrew. Oh my God, that hurt to say. Oh, my jaw feels weird. That they don't give a rat's ass that you're in Dollar General until you're accused of killing your wife. And then they're like, well, let's go back and trace it. So that's what I think happens.
58% of the country think it's common, 23 not common, and 18 aren't sure.
Not sure. Hey,
it's a good group.
Does your daily routine ever change?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes I go to the gym. Sometimes I don't.
Oh, mine does not. I feel like I do the same thing.
Really?
Yeah.
Like
how
like
I wake up.
Not even like minute changes. Like, I'm going to get up a little early today. And
well, I mean, maybe that. But I do the same thing. I get up. First thing I do is go get the paper from my mom. No. First thing I do is turn the coffee pot on. Then go get the paper. Then brush my teeth. Then make my coffee.
Yeah, there have been times where I've been like, oh, yeah, I went by the library before work. And Trish is like, what? You did something before work?
Yeah, I don't get the before work thing.
I mean,
unless
I don't
start until like 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, like us.
I feel kind of.
But we get here at like 11.
Am I the only one that doesn't brush his teeth until after coffee? Like whenever I brush my teeth, I
do both, though.
Yeah, well, no.
I do before and
when
after.
When I brush my teeth, I don't like to drink wine or coffee
because
it affects the way.
Yes.
So, what do you guys do?
I wait until basically, that's usually like my last step in getting ready is brushing my teeth and using Smart Mouth.
Yeah.
I just feel like I have such a bad taste in my mouth when I wake up. So I do it before coffee and then I do it right before I'm going to leave the house.
Mm. I don't like eat or drink anything before I get here. So it's not like... it's usually the last thing I do. I take a shower and then brush, but it's usually like the last thing I do before I leave. And since I'm not really eating anything, doesn't really. Like, it doesn't matter when I do it because it's not like, I don't want to brush my teeth and then drink coffee.
You don't drink coffee in the morning.
No, I don't usually drink anything until I have my
which is so
big
weird
to
me. So you don't drink anything until you leave the house and go to QT or wherever you go.
I'm usually leaving the house within an hour of waking up.
But
I mean,
still,
I'm not usually like
you
chilling
not have
out.
Anything to drink?
I wake up, roll out of bed, pretty much get in the shower, get myself ready, and then I'm out the door.
Coffee's probably my number one addiction in that way, because I think it does something for me just getting the caffeine, but also just the ritual.
Yes. Yeah.
Like if I don't know what I would do. Like just sitting there watching and making notes for show prep with no coffee just feels completely weird.
Man, and I always make my coffee the night before, and like the smell of it makes me so happy.
You make it to time it?
No, I just have it ready to where as soon as I get up, I can click the button. Yeah. And you know you're addicted whenever like the smell of it at 10 o'clock the night before is like, oh yeah.
To
have this.
64% of people say their daily routine hardly ever changes. So I am in the majority. Assuming you would pay more for these things if they could reliably last forever, rank them. There's only four. Like, what would you pay the most for as we go down the line? Cars, TVs, phones, kitchen appliances.
Cars would be last because I say I'd like to change cars, but I'm driving the same Jeep I've been driving for 10 years. But I don't think I'd want to drive the same car forever. So that's less important to me. What were the other ones?
Cars, phones, TVs, kitchen appliances.
I rent, so the kitchen appliances thing is like not my problem. So that's going to be my least important thing.
Yeah.
I think I would pay more for a car if it was like, this is your car.
Mm-hmm. Here's what I'm getting caught up on is like TV. I love my TV, but in 5 years, it's going to be janky.
You want the new version.
Right. Hmm. Yeah.
But it's going to last you forever, Dave.
It's going to last forever.
It's a thought experiment.
But would you, I get it, but would you want a 1985 box TV that was as perfect as it was the day you bought it? No.
Yeah, like does it update itself as it goes, I wonder?
No. But I guess people are just like, I don't like spending money on these things.
Like if my wig had lasted forever, I wouldn't want to still be wearing it. So.
Well, here's how the majority of Americans rank these items. Cars was number one. That was the most important. They would pay more if it could reliably last forever. Kitchen appliances was number two, then TVs, then phones. Do you like your own birthday?
Love it.
Yeah, it's fine.
July 30th. It's a solid birthday.
Yeah, I liked it when I was a kid because it was like halfway between Christmas. So like for planning out like present purposes, I could plan like, okay, so I can probably ask for this for my birthday. And then I have a solid like, you know, 5 months until Christmas. You know, it's like a nice break in the year.
So we have three summer birthdays in here. Didn't you guys all just pity your classmates who had to go to school on their birthday?
Oh, no. I wanted mine during school because you got like party and people brought in cupcakes.
Cares?
And it was like during the summer and no one knew it was my birthday because we were all doing our own thing.
I didn't
like Trish doesn't age.
My birthday is September 6th. I didn't like it because my mom's was the 5th and she's such a narcissist.
Oh my God.
So she called
you are lying.
She called it mom's birthday too.
Yes.
Whatever.
You're lying.
That's so funny.
I feel like they were once exciting and now I expect too much. I don't know what I expect, but I never get anything that I'm expecting, so it's like a big letdown.
Damn,
but Santa's like, still coming through at Christmas time.
You just dropped some knowledge.
62% of people love their birthday. Well, good for you.
Your sisters are listening right now like, geez, you hate it's her birthday?
Oh. How important is it to you to know where the food served to you in a restaurant was originally grown or raised?
It should be.
I know. No,
it should be way more important.
I don't even like to look at it. the stuff that I'm eating, like, you know, like fast food cheeseburgers or whatever. Like, I don't even like to look too closely.
He's closing
at that
his
stuff.
Eyes when he eats.
So the last thing I'm thinking about is where it came from.
Yeah,
if it came from the ground, I'm happy.
I never think about it until something like this comes up and then I start thinking about it and then I don't want to think about it. So I forget
I think
about
it's
it.
Like
again.
I love Chef's Table on Netflix. I there's so many things I want to be that I'm not. I want to be a foodie. I want to only eat beets grown in Hartford, Illinois and things like that. But I'm just not. I only watch it on TV. I'm not that guy in real life.
You'd like to be, though.
I would like to be.
55% of people say it's important to know where their food comes from. Yeah,
no,
I'm not sure I agree with that. 7% aren't
sure.
Like, I'm not sure if that's important. this was surprising. Can you name all three branches of government?
Yes.
Yes.
Red, white, and blue, baby.
Only 40% of Americans could name all three branches.
Not surprising.
That's sad.
18 could name two, 11% could name one, and 25% could not name any.
It's always sad whenever, like, Jimmy Kimmel or someone will send someone out to the streets of LA and be like, who is the vice president? And people are like, I don't know.
Well, who would like to name him to show off your knowledge?
I'll name him.
Okay.
The
Granimals.
Gina, the Penta, no. The judicial, the executive, and the legislative branch.
Can we get the bell?
Yes, you can.
Ding.
Thank you. If you could eliminate your own need for sleep, would you do it?
Wait, can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
Apropos what we just did.
Mm-hmm.
If someone said, you cannot eat or drink until you name all 46 presidents.
Oh, I'm dying of starvation.
Okay.
Absolutely, 100% without a doubt.
I think I could do it in 3 days of constant thinking.
Right.
Like if
it'd take me a while.
Oh, I don't even think I could do that.
Because you'll probably starve or die of thirst after 3 days, they
say. I feel like there would be two or three that I could sit for 10,000 years and not name.
Yeah, like Tyler or something.
I think if I started at Kennedy, I'd be fine. But before that, it's very dicey.
There's a period there.
Yeah,
there's like the early 1900s. Yes. I'm like, what was going on?
There's just a bunch of guys in vests that look like giant babies.
Yeah, I don't even know what was going on in history at that point.
So about the sleep.
if you could eliminate my own need for sleep.
Yeah, so you wouldn't feel any consequences. You'd be fine.
Oh, we did this while you were gone.
Oh, you did?
And I think all of us agreed that we enjoy sleep.
Yes, okay, me too.
Good to get a break. I have really bad insomnia sometimes, and I can function pretty well without it, or like as well as you can, but it just gets to a point where you're like, I want a break from being conscious.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And it feels so good. When you wake up. All right, one last one. Do you eat in bed?
No.
Never have.
I do.
I mean, I've done it in my life, but it's never been a thing.
Like, I eat on couch.
Tell us about your eating in bed.
I only started that when I was single. So I had never done it before, but then I just like spent a lot of time there watching TV. And I'm very neat. It's not like there's crumbs in the bed or anything.
You're not leaving the dirty dishes.
I mean,
in there.
Yeah, because I was in a condo and it was like my family room and my bedroom. And sometimes
do you have one of those like Brady Bunch
trays?
Yeah,
no,
just right on the lap.
I'm risky.
Would you like a tray?
Well, I mean, are you going to get me one?
Yes. I mean, you're eating in bed all the time.
No, it's like totally fine. I'm very neat. Only 35% of people do.
Okay. Very good. Welcome back, guys. DGS. Coming up next, we have Holly Thompson Rader, who is a rep who has written a book that's really taking off. Fascinating story. She's in the green room. She'll be on next. Right now, we have Kevin Killeen from our own newsroom, who had one of the best pranks pulled on him I've ever heard of.
Why, thank you. Yeah, I was had.
You were had.
And the hatter was Chris Myhill, Charlie Brennan's executive producer, who recently retired. He's a real prankster, and he came across a gold watch that he thought was real. It's a Rolex, and the jeweler said, "No, that's a fake." So he said, "How can I get Kevin Killeen with this?" And I had no idea. So here's the setup. It's a Friday night. You know, I'm tired, hungry, and demoralized. It's a typical Friday night. I feel like, you know, everything is futile. All the news doesn't matter. I misspelled the archbishop's name. How would you spell Rozanski?
I'm not even going to try.
That's what my problem was. So I come, you know, loping into the living room, and there's this little corner chair where my mail ends up, if I get mail, you know. And here it was, this gift bag, which greeted me, and I thought, huh, what's that? And as Rachel pointed out,
it's got a little snowman on it.
And I should have, in September, I should have known.
Boy, that reporter's eye.
But this just shows, you know, when you're down low, the willingness to accept any flattery, even counterfeit. And it says, Mr. Kevin Killeen, and here's I'll let Rachel read this.
Okay.
It's written in a sort of a font of fancy calligraphy, like when a corporation tries to act nice. And I thought, this looks legit. yet.
Yeah.
Am I reading the whole thing?
Oh, just whatever you think is important.
Mr. Kevin Killeen, congratulations on being recognized as the recipient of our inaugural Odyssey Excellence Employee. Each market manager was asked to submit one employee who best represented the five Odysseys. Uh-huh. After reviewing your credentials, achievements, and creative uh-huh. efforts, you were chosen as the sole individual of this special award.
Wow.
Wow. There were 48 markets that submitted entries with 235 stations represented.
Point, I'm standing up straight and I'm thinking, you know what? And then who is it signed by?
Well, it says, it is employees such as yourself that are the core of our communal success. Thank you for all of your work. David Field, the CEO of Odyssey.
And I've met David Field, and he's an on-the-go kind of guy. He cut through for a meeting once to say, everybody keep working. Bye. And it seems like something he would have written. It had, you know, buzzwords like communal and...
the five Odysseys.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a question. What are the five Odysseys exactly, Kevin?
I never heard. But so then I took this, and I'll let Trish open this up. This is the gold watch, and when I pulled it out, it was like King Tut's tomb, the glint of gold
like,
everywhere.
Oh, my God, a Rolex and old tissue paper. That would have been another clue. But you didn't get the box
but
that came
what,
with
I
it.
Mean, you know jewelry. When you look at that, doesn't that
I mean,
have the dazzle?
Nice.
It's like
yeah.
a Broadway
yeah,
show.
Well, just without the box and wrapped up in tissue paper.
So I've read the letter. I'm looking at this gleam. It's like the sun. You have to look away from this watch. It's so bright. And I go into the kitchen, and my wife is there stirring some beans over by the 60-watt bulb. And I say, look at this. Look at this. I got a gold watch. I got a gold watch. I got a letter from the top guy. He thinks I'm great. And I'm starting to believe in myself again. And I can feel the enzymes moving throughout my circulatory system. So she says, well, you better call your boss. And I called Beth Coghlan, the news director, and she said, Kevin, I don't know what you're talking about, but none of that is true.
Nobody nominated you.
And I thought, who would have done this? Who is diabolical enough? There were two suspects. The first was retired dentist Steve Fleischhut. Have you ever heard of Steve?
No. Mm-mm.
He's the kind of practical joker who, when he found out my dog liked to retrieve the Post-Dispatch from the lawn, on Christmas Eve, he threw 50 Post-Dispatches and other newspapers on the lawn. So when we swung open the door, the dog was like,
which one do I get?
Yeah. I thought it was him, but then I thought, no, he wouldn't know all that stuff about David Field. And then I thought, Chris Mile. So I called him up, and he was laughing like a madman with, you know, cathartic release, like, ah, ha, 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 ha. And it just went on, and it was like Nicholson and Cuckoo's Nest.
Dude, I gotta tell you something. When you told me this story, I was in awe of this prank, much less now, because it's in a Christmas bag wrapped in Kleenex, and it's the same color as C-3PO from Star Wars. It took a lot of...
I'm gullible. I was at a low ebb. I mean, so I think I'm going to wear it, you know, from time to time.
Oh, you need to wear it all the time.
Value it as a...
I
feel
woman's.
Like an indicted alderman,
it's
though.
A woman.
I'm pretty sure.
It's better than if they had given me a real gold watch.
I love it. Thank you, Kev.
Thank you.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. It's 3:35. Happy Thursday to you. Gorgeous weather out there. Really excited to talk to my next guest, Holly Thompson Rader. She is a state senator from Southeast Missouri. She's the author of Cinder Girl, and everyone who I'm asking, like, oh, do you know this person? I'm like, oh, yeah, I know this person. I really like her. This book, it's amazing. Thank you for coming in live. Very nice to meet you.
Very nice to meet you. It's a pleasure to be on.
So, so much to talk about. Before we get into the book, let's just do a general introduction. Since you're from Southeast Missouri, just tell us about yourself, your family, your upbringing, so forth.
So this is my second year in the Senate. I was in the House for 8 years, ran a business. My former husband and I had cable television contracting company, so ran that for 17 years. And I have three kids, three grandchildren, and... you know, I got into politics very oddly. My background is not anything to do with politics. I was raised on welfare, single parent home. My mother struggled with mental illness her whole life. And, you know, when things would get difficult, we would just jump on a Greyhound bus and move to the next place.
Wow.
I lived in over 30 places from the end of the third grade to the beginning of the 10th grade when I ended up quitting school at 15 to help take care of my family. We were in a really bad car accident, and I needed to do that. But then I also got married at 15 to my 21-year-old boyfriend and had my first baby by the time I was 16. So I was a high school dropout, had my first baby, and was headed down the same path that I'd been raised in.
Wow.
And I didn't want that for my daughter. So I put my head down and worked my way out.
Yeah. At what, and I'm assuming this is the what the book is about, basically, just, you know, where you've been, where you're going. At what point in your life did it hit you, wait a minute, I'm doing the same thing? Was it after you got married, after you got pregnant, or even leading up to that, did you have a feeling inside like the trajectory is not good here?
Right. And, you know, it was basically standing in the trailer park, and my mother's fifth husband was had come after me with a knife, and he pivoted and went after her, and I was able to call the police, which I typically didn't do, because the first time I'd called the police, it didn't turn out well for her.
Yeah.
But when they came and got him in the back of the cop car and they were pulling out, and I was just looking at my mama standing there and in the trailer park, and, you know, different people consoling her, and I thought, she's not going to press charges, and I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
I just can't do this anymore. And I was 14 at the time, and that's when I started asking her to sign the papers when I turned 15 so I could get married. And so getting married was my way out of that. And
yeah, I was going to ask you, and I apologize in advance, very personal questions. Tell me to shut up if you need to.
No, and yeah.
When you got married at 15, was it, I'm so in love, I need to get, or was it like, here's a way out of this stuff?
It was both. Yeah. You know, I thought I was in love. We'd been going together for 2 years, and he had lived with us on and on since I was 13.
Yeah.
And clearly, I grew up in a little bit different culture than, you know, what I raised my children in. But yeah, and it was my way out. It was my way. I needed to become an adult so that I could start charting my own path instead of having someone who I loved deeply. But, you know, my mama really, her struggle with mental illness stemmed from her being sexually abused from 4 years of age.
Yeah.
And so she lived by her emotions, and I just couldn't do that anymore.
Yeah. Is your mom still with us?
She's not. She passed at 51. She had Huntington's chorea, so that took her pretty fast.
Yeah. How was your relationship with your mom once you were emancipated and you started living your own life?
Very good. I tell you, in my family, you know, we live more like a clan than we're all together. Cousins, nieces, nephews, you know, we're all raised together.
Yeah.
And she was totally comfortable with that. I actually made her life harder, because once I got probably 11 years old and I started kind of kicking back against, we can't move again, why are we leaving this time, you know?
Yeah.
And so it was a little bit easier on her to not have me in the house questioning things and saying, yeah, no, not this time, let's not do it. But what Cinder Girl does is I really, from being in the Missouri legislature, I really saw how 10 years ago it was much worse than it is now. Folks are really becoming educated. But I really saw how people looked at addiction and sometimes mental illness as a moral failing and not what it truly is. And that's a medical condition. And so I really wanted to put a true face to it. And so I really felt compelled to write this and just tell the stories and tell what it truly looks like and some of the reasons of how people find themselves in that situation. When I go speak in high schools, nobody, you know, when I say, what do you want to be when you grow up? Nobody raises their hand and says, I want to be a drug addict.
Sure.
You know, that's not how it works. But so often people still look at it that way. And so hopefully, and I've had some really good reviews, hopefully when folks read Cinder Girl, they'll walk away with a little bit of a different understanding on mental illness, on domestic violence, on addiction.
So I've been writing the same book for 20 years now and have never finished it. And part of it was true. Some of it's just my funny stories, but part of it was also true. And I found that when I was writing that, it was as if it was like a past life or like a life review. I was experiencing those things in a very real way. Did you have the same sort of experience?
I did. You know, my mama was she really believed in therapy. And she had us girls in therapy, but my older sister would tell me, she's like, just tell them what they want to hear and they'll get you out of there faster. Mm. You know, so I never took it serious as a child. As an adult, writing that book and telling those stories, because my process has always been, I just push it down and go. I just move on. I shut it off. That's happened. Fine. I'm moving past it. No hard feelings. I'm just not, you know, going to be a part of that anymore. I move on. But I had to really deal with it. You know, like you said, writing it, it was very much a review of things that I had not reviewed and ever. And so probably why it took me a few years to write it.
Sure. So difficult to sum up a life in a few minutes, but take me from 15 and married and 16 and pregnant to owning a business and being a part of the state legislature. There's a big gap there.
Right. So I got my GED when I was 18 or 19 and then started college classes. And I was taking college. It took me 17 years to get my degree because I did it on the weekends and at night, you know, and worked more than a full-time job and raised three babies. But after 7 years, I divorced my first husband. And then within 2 years, I was remarried again. And at 19, I started working as a payment processor at a cable company, at the corporate office of a cable company. So I was the one opening the mail, and I did that minimum wage, took that job when I was going through my first divorce. And with that company, I worked my way up. So I was there for 14 years. When I left there, I was one of the top five directors in the company. So I was taking my college classes. I was the first one there, the last one to leave. I kept my head down. I didn't complain. I was very grateful for my job, and they were so good to me.
Yeah.
But as a director of government affairs for that cable company, I had started getting asked to come to Jefferson City and speak on some bills that affected our industry. I had never been around government. I was in survival mode the beginning years of parenthood. I may or may not have known who the president was. So I get to Jeff City, and I'm like, my husband and I had just started our own business, cable contracting. He had lost his job, and he was on the technical side in the cable industry. I was working on behalf of all the cable companies in Missouri, speaking on behalf of them in Jefferson City. So I was able to get his contracts. He was able to fill them on the technical side. So we just started our business. I'm in Jeff City, and I'm like, these are the folks that are deciding where my taxes are going, you know? And it's like,
I can do this.
Maybe I need to be here with my big mouth. So, you know, so I went home and talked to my husband and said, hey, I think that this is something we should look at when our kids are old enough. And that's what we did. And, you know, I went to work for Joanne Emerson, our congresswoman, for a couple of years because, look, I'm not perfect, and so I did not breed perfect children, and we are a spirited bunch, and I wanted to be sure my family could handle it. Politics is, you know, it's pretty rough on your family. Yeah.
Can you hang out one more segment?
Absolutely.
Good.
Absolutely.
I have a couple specific questions I want to ask you when we come back. Welcome back, guys. Holly Thompson-Rader is here. She is a state senator from Southeast Missouri. Her book, Cinder Girl, just came out about a month ago, and talking about her story. Grew up in a trailer park and married at 15, a mom at 16, and addiction issues in her family and just all sorts of stuff, and pulled herself up and had a successful business and was a state rep for 8 years, and now she's a state senator. And I'm going to go ahead and tell what you just told so I can ask you the question I want to ask you. On the break, I said, so opposition research, what did your opponents come at you about? And you said they came at me about, like, my daughter was an addict at that point and this and this and this and this. And you said, this isn't something I'm embarrassed of. This is exactly why I'm running.
Right. That's exactly right. And you know, it wasn't, I mean, the minute I started talking to people, I met more, actually, right after I announced is when I got custody of my grandson. And as a toddler, he was pulled out of a meth lab. He was born with opioids in his system. he was almost two when I took custody of him, and my daughter went into another treatment facility. And, you know, I had so many other people that were telling me, hey, I'm raising my grandchildren too. And then I started getting asked to come speak at different church gatherings and things where there's a group, grandparents raising their grandchildren. And you had all of these mamas needing help on how to help their child get out of addiction. You know, and I didn't know because mine was still in it. And mm-hmm. she spent 13 years in deep addiction. I mean, she was shooting up bath salts, meth, what have you. When I finally understood addiction and was able to get her into a program that was longer term, had recovery and the mental health component to it that you have to have, she's been clean for 8 years and is the best mama I know. She's phenomenal. And her and my grandson, I had him probably until he was 6 or 7, quasi. She was in the house with us the last couple of years. And, I mean, he prefers her now. You know, I mean, their fully restored relationship. I mean, God has blessed us.
That's great. So, obviously, being in the legislature, you know all the culture wars and everything. And one of them that's going on now, especially when it has to do with crime, is, well, don't be too hard on whoever these people are, whatever race, whatever part of the state they're from, because they grew up in this way, trailer park or no dad or whatever it happens to be. And there are people who will say, hey, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You didn't have it any worse than anyone else. It's, you know, you have to make your own way. And then other people will say, well, we really need to not make excuses for people who grew up that way, but give them a lot of slack. Like, when you're legislating, when you're talking to groups, when you're just living your life, having lived this life, how do you feel about that?
So I'm somewhere in the middle, because coming through it myself, I see that so often, and this is both sides of the aisle, we have people who are devising programs and things to help people that have never been in it. They've never lived it. And so, for instance, you know, the program that we did to help pay for folks to go back to college that are in their 20s. Well, that's, you know, I didn't vote for that. But I paid for my own college, spent 17 years because I did it while I was paying for it. So, but you can't take somebody who is 22 and has a family, is supporting themselves, full-time job, and then say, oh, well, we're going to pay for you to go back to college. We'll pay for the 2 years that you don't have, you know, if you go get signed up and get in this program. Well, they have bills to handle, you know. I mean, so it's all these great ideas that really don't, they can't quit their job and their bills and their life to go be a student for 2 years and get this program and get this training. They're going to need technical programs. That's where we need to be putting, you know, a ton of money into. Anyways, so we have these programs and things that we try to do to help lift people up that really just turns into more government spending and waste, and in my opinion. And with my mother and the women in my family, I mean, I watched brilliant women where compassion overriding common sense, I mean, those programs kept them from ever rising to their potential. Just holding them back, really,
yeah,
because it didn't challenge them. So for me, like, I think that, yes, when it comes to helping with daycare, because you're working or you're in a job, in a volunteer, because volunteering helps open doors, or you're being in some form of educational program, helping with daycare, I think, is incredibly important. I think the hand up things are where we should be focusing our help, not the handout. When we reformed the welfare program several years ago, we moved it back to where you can only be on TANF for 3 years. But there are benchmarks along the way where you have to be in volunteering or an educational program or getting a job. I mean, I grew up in a house that no one worked. there's a lot of people like me who never saw anyone work.
You don't have like a role model.
That's right.
Well, it's a pleasure to meet you. It's an amazing story. The book is Cinder Girl, like Cinderella, Cinder Girl by Holly Thompson Rader. And we'll have you back anytime. Thank you, Holly.
Thank you for having me on.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.